There is also an executive order directing us to work with the Department of Water Resources on a long-term plan for improved water use efficiency. And so it really seems that what we're going to be doing is maybe shifting more toward gallons per capita per day. So I just have a couple of figures that I want to share with you. So instead of looking at the 20% reduction and 25 or whatever, looking at statewide average per capita residential use, and statewide comparing 2013 to 2016, we saw that that average number went down by 22.5 gallons over that period of time. So in 2013, average gallons per capita, 108 per day, 108 gallons, and in 2016, down to 86. And so I asked our staff to pull out this region, which of course, each region is different. A good part of this region has higher temperatures, so we would expect, to see higher use. But residential gallons per capita per day in 2013, in the Lahontan region, 133, and then 2016 reduced all the way down to 107. So you all deserve, to be congratulated for your efforts, and I know that there's a lot of focus in this region as elsewhere in the state to continue to make progress. Next slide. Okay, so now I'd like to shift to some of the major actions that our board will be undertaking this year, statewide policies update, and I really appreciate yesterday's report. I got a lot out of that as well, and I was surprised to hear that these reports aren't done in all the regions, and so, I'm going to mention that. When I go back to Sacramento, Steve Moore seems to be in the role taking over from board member Spidey Weber, who will be retiring next week, and is working with all of the regions collectively. And so it'd be nice to have, I would find it useful to see a report like that from all the regions. Anyway, I think you guys covered a lot of this yesterday, so I'm going to zoom through these following slides fairly quickly. So first of all, we have an update of our water quality enforcement policy. So the last time this was updated was 2010, and initially this was brought before us mainly to address some inconsistencies in the 2010 policy and to provide for greater transparency and fairness throughout the regions. I think that when this came before us, we did get a lot of questions from the stakeholder community, not just about what was being proposed, but also wanting to revisit some of the items from 2010. And so we felt that it was important to delay that. It was scheduled for us to adopt this last week. We've committed to some further stakeholder meetings throughout March and then bring it back in April. One of the additions that we have is to incorporate the human right to water and disadvantaged communities in case prioritization. That reminds me, I know you adopted the resolution, so thank you for that. We're seeing action by a number of regions regarding the human right to water. Next slide. Mercury water quality objectives and implementation. This is a statewide mercury water quality objectives to protect beneficial uses of water involving human health and aquatic dependent wildlife. And it includes a program of implementation to control mercury discharges. The current draft that we have provides for specific objectives, and there is some discussion about how to provide for some greater flexibility so that dischargers that can really make a difference would be subject to this policy. And so again, this is an example where I think we did the right thing in asking staff to spend a little bit more time on it. And so we were scheduled to have adopted it, but have asked for some additional stakeholder meetings and workshops, and it'll be coming back to us in May. It seems a little confusing, but this is also the place where we will be considering establishment of beneficial uses for tribal traditional use and cultural use, tribal subsistence fishing, and then also non-tribal subsistence fishing. And staff determined that this was really the best place to move forward with this policy, and there have been some questions about how that would actually play out. So again, these additional opportunities to have stakeholder discussions. I was at a workshop on this issue in particular and think that there are some better ways that we can thread the needle on this. Bacteria standards, I know that you already mentioned this in the context of grazing, establishment of statewide bacteria standards. And we have a release draft for public comment that will be coming out in April. I know that this is an issue that's very important to this region, and so I think it's important for you all and the local stakeholders here to continue to be involved in the process. Our staff is hoping to bring this to us for board consideration by September. Okay, and then discharges, next slide. Yeah, discharges of dredge and fill materials, wetlands definition. I think Executive Officer Pumujian really did have a good explanation about the challenge here with what's going on at the federal level. The purpose really was to strengthen protections for what's called the Clean Water Act gap. And so that gap could change depending upon what the Trump administration is able to do, you know, as compared to the waters of the U.S. Regulation that was well underway to becoming effective. And so our staff would be, the idea here would be to provide for regulatory consistency and to provide some greater predictability for the regulated community and those that are, you know, impassioned about protecting wetlands, providing for streamlined permit process and more predictable requirements. And so, but that all centers around what seems to be simple, and that is just a definition. But then, of course, depending on what that gap is, could result in quite a lot of interest, we suspect. Staff is doing what they can to sort of, again, thread the needle and keep track of what's going on at the federal level, and expect to be releasing a draft for public comment in May and then bringing it to us in November. Next slide. I know it was mentioned yesterday, there's not a lot of wineries in this region, but I'm kind of excited about this general order. And you're all familiar with, you know, the interest at the state level to do more general orders where appropriate, and sometimes it's not appropriate. And so there are a couple of regions that already have general orders for wineries, and Region 5 that's got quite a few wineries. I think they're interested in us pursuing a general order, and then, you know, other regions, it's still being worked out. But the interesting thing about this one is that our staff is proposing that as part of a general order, and I think they're looking at a tiered approach. I know it was mentioned yesterday that, you know, what wineries exist here are really small, and how would that fit in with a regulatory scheme that's permitting large wineries? And so the main concern is that 80% of the wineries are unpermitted in California. And so really to bring everybody into the regulatory scheme that needs to be in and then have a tiered approach depending upon the size and the type of activity. Industry is actively involved in the discussions on the general, on the you know, preliminary discussions on the general order, because it's being held out there that there is a possibility for a streamlined permitting approach, and not just for the winery general order, but also consideration of sort of a one-stop shop for, say, stormwater, possibly irrigated lands. So this is something that is really in the concept phase. I'm definitely interested in following this one closely, because if this can, you know, be productive, where we could actually get something, perhaps a more streamlined approach could be utilized in some of the other general orders as well. Next slide. Toxicity amendments. This is to provide for use of a consistent statewide objective and implementation use of a test of significant toxicity. Don't ask me to explain that to you, but toxicity test method. Really, the goal is to provide for consistent protection throughout the state and make sure that we're using the proper test methods and the best analytical methods that are available. And a draft proposal will be coming out in May. That's it. And what I've done here is just provided the key point of contact for more information on these orders.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments, Ms. Pop?
Thank you, Sir Pump. Good to see you, Judy. Hello.
Hi.
The maps that you showed of the drought and the rainfall, are those available on the State Board website? Those were great graphics.
Right. They are available on CDEC's website, and you know, I don't think that the document has the website attachment. I can get that to you.
Okay, thank you.
It's cdec.water.ca.gov, and you know, just for the public to know, and then I'll make sure you get it. It's a really useful site. Most of these slides are on that site.
Okay.
Mr. Dias?
Yes, one question, thank you. Regarding the 80% of California's wineries that remain unpermitted, I assume then that there are 20% that are permitted?
Yes.
And if so, under what general order are the 20% regulated?
So Region 1 has a general order. Region 2 has one under development. Region and probably further along than Region 3 that also has one under development. I don't know about Region 5, but Region 5 I think is interested in us developing the statewide general order. And so I think it's at such an early stage that there's still a lot of discussions that are going on within the regions. And I don't know, Patty, do you have anything to add to that? As far as process and input from the regions?
I do know that the regions are very actively involved in this, and I believe Reach 5 does have some form of a something, I know. So they are very actively involved, and there's been meetings going on for over a year on this. We just have not been active in it, because for a long time we didn't think we had any. So we're sort of on the sidelines, our region on this one.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, and I think the larger wineries, they have individual WDRs, and there's probably going to be some discussion about, you know, maybe the need for that for the really large wineries.
Yeah. Mr. Sandell?
I wish you could come to all of the meetings. I had a question.
Me too.
A general question about the test of significant toxicity. Give me a clue about what type of cover. I mean, there are so many toxic things. There must be some basket of things you're going to have to throw
so in there. So this has been explained to me several times, and because I don't have a technical background, all I know is that it would provide for greater consistency and the ability to pick up on hits, and it also includes a mechanism for continued testing. And so what I'd like is, Elizabeth, do you have anything to add? Because she's actually designated as key staff working on this.
Oh, great.
you get the expert.
Well, I'm an attorney, so I'm not going to get into the technical things, because I'm sure you don't want me to explain those things, but The toxicity plan is going to put forth an acute and chronic objective, water quality objective, and then also a program of implementation for different types of dischargers. And then a component of that is having EPA-approved test methods be used in toxicity testing. And then once that data is generated from that test methods, you have to analyze it, and you analyze it through the test of significant toxicity, which is a statistical approach. So it's not a test method. It's not a test method is involving critters, you know, and looking at the observation. The test of significant toxicity is once you have that information, how do you analyze it to actually determine whether or not there's toxicity?
So more later.
More later.
Yes. And it's an EPA approved method, but it has generated some controversy by the regulated community. They have a lot of questions about it, so it's taken a while to develop. It's confusing, so people need time to digest it and better understand it.
Right, and each region is doing a slightly different statistical approach right now. Some use NOAAQ, some use other statistical approaches, so this is an attempt to have statewide consistency in how data is analyzed.
Dr. Horn?
Actually, I can shed a little bit of light on that from many years ago when I did case studies on saccharin and aflatoxin, I think it was. I had the pleasure of delving into the world of epidemiology, which is an impressive world to be involved in for a while. I mean, a lot of it is, it's actually straightforward. You've got some effect in a mouse. What does that mean for a human being? And so, I mean, how you extrapolate from a mouse or a sheep, when Dr. Nebaker was involved with our work, or, you know, whatever the test animal is. I mean, so how relevant is that finding in that animal to human physiology? It's an enormous debate that scientists work on. So that's basically all I have to say about that.
And I just wanted to add with the toxicity plan, it's not going to be recreational or human health beneficial uses. We're going to be addressing aquatic life.
So even more questions there.
Yeah.
So I reiterate other board members' thanks, deep heartfelt thanks to Board Member D'Adamo for spending an entire board meeting with us. I think that has never happened before in my board. Usually the state board member who comes gets up at the beginning of the meeting, says their thing, and then leaves. And so for you to spend so much time listening to us, our debate of the issues, and the reports from our staff, I'm very grateful for that. So thank you for that's quite a gift for you to spend.
Well,
so much
thank
time
you. How lucky I got to hear Leviathan,
yeah, right.
Stormwater grazing, issues that I was really interested in. And then it was great to see your public process during public comment.
Thank you. Just a couple comments, questions. My latest hobby horse is about how we use language to talk about climate in California. And I've decided that we have to ban the word normal, because 1 year is two standard deviations below, the next year is two standard deviations above. And, Chair Marcos was very effective talking about how, you know, California has the most changeable hydrology, variable hydrology of any state of our 50 states. And I mean, it just as we talk about this, I think it's important to think about just pounding that message into people's heads that it's from 1 year to the next, we can have completely different conditions, and we have to learn to expect that and to figure out how to live with that instead of planning around normal, because we almost never hit normal. It's a statistical artifact. Average is better, because that's clearly a statistical term for those who have taken statistics. But just kind of, it's either feast or famine. Now, that's a good way to talk about it.
You'll want to take a look at the final version of the climate change resolution that we just adopted,
okay,
because Board Member Moore proposed an amendment that in modeling, specifically directing our staff to look at extreme events.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. Just a quick question. So for, particularly some of the groundwater basins in the San Joaquin area, which has been hammered over the last few years, have you heard any estimates on what the recovery time of groundwater levels might be in these basins?
No, not even close. The Sustainable Groundwater Management Act is interesting because when it first came out, I would say there was panic. A lot of people were in these basins. You know, they've been overdrafting their basins, and so now things are coming home to roost. Panic, frustration, why is Sacramento telling us what to do? These are our local supplies. And now at this point, I think that it's fair to say, and I because that's where I live, I spend a lot of time in the valley, just going, you know, popping in on some of those discussions. Folks have really rolled up their sleeves. Right now the focus is on governance and getting the money to do the modeling. So wherever you go, the one thing that you will hear is estimates on how much farmland is going to come out of production. And that's people just kind of making an estimate. And the PPIC report, the draft report that just came out, I believe they have some figures there, but no one's estimating on what exactly it's going to take, how long for them to rebound. We just know there's that 20-year requirement, and each basin is very different. Even looking at recharge opportunities, in some basins, it's pretty easy to recharge depending upon the soil types. In others, it's going to be sort of a challenge to even find a place to park stormwater.
So, thank you. I've been looking into the question of the degree to which forest ecosystem management can increase water supply, specifically. There's been a lot of talk about that. There's a lot of questioning whether that's really true, and if so, how much. And you know, the science isn't settled on that question. So I had a long conversation with a gentleman who used to be the faculty advisor of the Sachem Fields Association, and he's now, he just won a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Geophysical Union. And, you know, from all I hear, he is, like, the best at modeling all this stuff and understanding how these systems work. And he lives in Switzerland now, by the way. So when I was talking to him, he was in Switzerland. And basically where he came down is what forest ecosystem management can do is shift the distribution of water between evaporation and sublimation. So where it really makes the most difference is in the area that has the snowpack. So below the snowpack, I think, at least in the forest ecology world, people are pretty, the science has pretty much concluded that there isn't much an effect of vegetation management below the snow line. But up in the snowpack, that's where there can be a significant change in by thinning the trees, mm-hmm. allowing more snow to get to the ground, and then it's unshaded by the trees, and it can just slowly melt and infiltrate into the ground. And from what I understand, particularly in the San Joaquin Basin, a lot of recharge areas are up in the forest area. They're not down on the valley floor. So I just wanted to share that information with you. And some science that actually could confirm to me that probably is true is, now it's not Yosemite, but it's another national park that's near Yosemite where they've been allowing, do you know which one it is?
King's Canyon,
where they've been letting fires burn and they've been collecting, seeing how natural fire regime, which results in reduced tree intensities, what difference it makes. And they are actually seeing increased flows in the Merced River there. Some creek, maybe. But anyway, so that's a Scott Stevens you know, one of his graduate students are doing that research, and he's overseeing that, and that is really validating what Jim Kirshner told me, the guy over in Switzerland. So I just wanted to share that with you.
It's important to get the science to move forward. I know AQUA came out with its report about a year and a half ago regarding the headwaters, and this issue was included in that. I know there's been work at UC Merced specifically on the snowpack issues that you've talked about as well. And so just connecting the dots to get the broader water use community behind these efforts so that it's not just the forestry buffs that are focused on it,
right,
the broader water use community, and the urban areas as well.
And the thing about, yes, in the urban areas in particular, the challenge with forestry is that there are so many variables and it's so complicated. And, you know, there have been eye-popping numbers that come out of the Feather River drainage about how much increased water supply would occur with thinning the forest in the Feather River drainage. From what I gather, those numbers, we would not necessarily find that same kind of increased water supply outside of the Feather River drainage. It has to do with the particular geology of the Feather River drainage watershed. And so, you know, the studies are variable quality. There are different factors involved, and so it's very hard to come up with, you know, an answer about this. But, you know, science is working on it.
Thank you.
Mr. Jardine.
No, it was a wonderful talk, wonderful presentation you just gave. As we talked about variability, I look at the Carson Valley, which is very porous, and the recharge is significant already. And upstream at the headwaters in Alpine County, we have fractured rocks, and the recharge is quite different.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that one size does not fit all.
Yep.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I join our other board members in thanking you for taking the time to attend our whole meeting. And we appreciate every opportunity we have to talk with you and meet with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good to see you all.
Turning to the reports of board members, Ms. Cox.
I love the video system. I much appreciate being able to see all of you. Let me turn the camera around so I can see you, Mr. Chair. I would like for us to work on the sound a little bit. It's really challenging to hear you all, but this is a wonderful system, so thank you to staff for working on it. And that's all I have.
Mr. Dias?
No report, thank you.
Mr. Sandell?
Nothing here, thanks.
Dr. Horn?
I've been a road warrior since we last met in January. So among the things that I've done is I wrote a grant proposal to the U.S. Forest Service for a regional California-Nevada wood utilization team so that we could combine efforts in the Central Sierra, east of the Sierra Crest, and the forestry people in northern Nevada. We've been working on picking juniper, and also it brings in the work that Chair Pumphrey has been involved in or monitoring with the ranchers down in Bridgeport in the pinyon juniper removal efforts. So we'll see. I mean, the Forest Service is, as all federal agencies, are kind of up in the air about what's going forward, but anyway, I submitted that proposal. I went to the California Climate Change Symposium. There were three members of the staff there, and it was a great learning experience. One thing that I hadn't understood before is how important extreme heat is as an impact of climate change. And, you know, I mean, our southern Lahontan region is going to be hit, perhaps, it's going to be one of the hardest hit in terms of extreme heat. And so I'm not quite sure what that means in terms of our work, but there was an interesting study about how that affects people's psychology, and, you know, suicide rate goes up and domestic abuse goes up, and and it hits the EJ community particularly hard because they don't have resources to, they can't afford to air condition their homes, etc. So that was interesting to learn about. Also, 86% of the above ground biomass in California is in the forests. So between the forest fires and tree mortality, the Sierra is now turning into, from a place where carbon is sequestered to a place that is emitting carbon to the atmosphere. And in the forestry community, we're talking about how that is swamping all the efforts and improvements on climate change that California has made through renewable energy and focusing on electric cars and all that in urban areas. There is a forest carbon plan out. It's a struggle to get, I think, the attention that forest management would do if we really want to be effective in addressing climate change. I attended the Alpine County Biomass Committee twice. Actually, I'm sorry, was the presenter. Been to workshops on the Air Board scoping plan, the forest carbon plan. I attended the Sierra Nevada Conservancy Summit and the board meeting of the Sierra Nevada Conservancy. And I'm sorry to say that my takeaway from all of this is that east of the Sierra Crest, we're kind of on our own. The Oroville Dam problems has really, it's focused attention on the upper watersheds, but truthfully, it's the upper West Slope watersheds, the ones that actually feed the Central Valley Project and the State Water Project. And then also the problem of a lot of our EJ communities down along 395 and elsewhere don't rate on Enviro screen. And most of the water in our region, actually, much of the surface water belongs to Nevada. And so we just have to try harder to get California to focus on the water problems in our part of the state and to figure out how to get resources to deal with it. There are people who live here, we pay taxes. It's a challenge. That's all.
Mr. Jardine.
No report.
I have no report. Well, I actually have a report, but it's not a report of anything that we didn't already know, and that is that it's time to say goodbye to Kim Meyer. Yes, indeed. It's time to say hello to Elizabeth. We have to do that, and I don't want you to feel it just because we're brokenhearted and losing Kim, that we're not appreciative of your being here. I think I speak on behalf of the board, and I'm going to give each of the board members an opportunity to actually tell you how much they're going to miss you. But you've done really wonderful work for us. It's been an invaluable assistance so many times that I could not list them. And you've done it with a remarkably good nature and a good spirit. As someone who's not famous for those qualities, I really admire them in other people. So we have for you some items. We have a certificate of appreciation from the members of the board who are here. Unfortunately, we couldn't figure out how to get all of the board members' signatures, but I'm sure that they're all appreciative. We have a couple of cards also wishing you well. And I want to tell you that the staff has presented for you a gift certificate for REI so that you can get something to enjoy all this wonderful snow that we have. We're going to miss you very, very much, but we know you're on to bigger and better things in your new job. And if any of us are in Sacramento, I'm probably think that we'll hunt you down in the EPA building and say hello. So thank you. Thank you very much. Ms. Cox, did you want to say goodbye? That's awful.
I'm crying. I can't speak. We will miss you, Kim. Thank you so much.
Mr. Dyes.
Kim, we will miss you very much, and I want to especially thank you for all the individual attention you've given us through the years and the guidance you provide. Thank you.
Mr. Sandell.
Thank you. You'll be missed.
Dr. Horn.
Well spoken, Chair Pumphrey. I share your sentiments. You are the third council that I am now saying goodbye to in my 14 years of being on the board. And therefore, I can with confidence say I will be thinking of you many times in the future, because I know that I always think of the other two that I've already said goodbye to. So you have made your mark here. And there is a legacy to be carried on. I've appreciated you as a colleague. I've come to call you a friend. Yeah, wait. I will not say goodbye to you as a friend.
Mr. Jordy.
Well, you've done a wonderful job for the community, for the people of the Lahontan region, the state of California, and look forward to continuing to visit with you. Good job.
Ms. Kleinjian.
I just want to say a few words on behalf of the staff. I also refuse to say goodbye, but I always say hello and welcome to your new post, because it has always been my wish that the region boards work more closely with the Division of Drinking Water. So until I talk to you next time, Kim, for all of us and our staff as well, I don't think words can express for myself and our staff the gratitude that we can give you for all the counsel you have given us. And by counsel, I mean helping us with issues small and large, being there for advice, at times a shoulder to cry on. You have given us friendship and generosity and guidance. I think went beyond legal counsel to being supportive and helpful, and even giving us policy advice to do the right thing. And to do the right thing is what you've always encouraged us to do. So I think, speaking for myself, I've learned a lot more from you. I am better for it. I think, speaking for the staff, I probably can say the same, that we've learned from you. So thank you.
So thank you very, very much, Kim. I hope you understand how greatly, greatly you've been appreciated. No one here wants to say goodbye, so we're not going to. So if I don't see you at the chair's meeting, I will see you at meal days.
Well, I just want to thank all of you guys, and it's been an amazing time here for me. I've learned a lot. It was a great opportunity when I came from Region 1 to all of a sudden be the attorney by myself, which Elizabeth is going to experience in it. There's, some difficult moments, but, I couldn't have done it without all of your support, too. I think you guys just have been really great to me and supportive, and I've really enjoyed working with the staff. Lahontan has just such passionate and dedicated people, and it's a beautiful part of the state. I've seen some great stuff, and I consider all of you guys my friends now, too, and love just sharing interest and finding about, mountain bike trails and hiking places and special places to go here in Lahontan. And I know I'll see you guys in Sacramento. If you're there, please come by or give me a call and I'll come down if you don't get a coffee, because I've really enjoyed working with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you. So the next and last item on the agenda is the executive officer's report.
I was going to say good morning, Chairman, Humphrey Mitch, but I can't say that anymore.
No, you got a minute and 10 seconds.
This is actually the part of the executive officer report. We give the quarterly violations report, but you received that yesterday from Kathy Poole, so I'll suspend with that. I want to just give you an update on the staffing report.